You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News. Over the past 5 years, scientists and researchers at Simon Fraser University have been trying to better understand changes to habitat, salmon, and the impact of climate change throughout the Skeena watershed. SFU biological scientist and Libra Eero postdoctoral fellow Dr. Michael Price has been leading the research and recently published a study showing how juvenile salmon in Northwest BC have adapted to climate change over the past 100 years, confirming that some juvenile salmon are growing faster now than they did 100 years ago due to climate change by the warming of deep glacial-fed lakes that seem to be becoming more productive over time. Price and his colleagues' paper was published in the journal Global Change Biology and found that the annual freshwater growth of juvenile salmon is substantially higher in recent years than it was a century ago by about 35%. Today, we sit down with Dr. Price to find out how this work was undertaken and what this means for the future of Skeena salmon. Stay with us.
I'm Michael Price. I'm on the Middle Wetsinqua, right across from Smithers Riverside Park.
Great. Thanks, Mike, for being with us here on CICK News. There's a lot of pieces that play into this work that you've done over the last few years. So maybe tell me, give me an overview, firstly, of what have you been up to these last few years working on your PhD? Why is this type of work so important to you?
Yeah, during those PhD years, I've been looking back in time a lot, so reflecting, not so much reflecting on my own life, which I need to do more often, but yeah, looking back as far back as sort of contemporary period salmon data run, so the last century, trying to understand how populations, salmon populations, have changed over this time period. And it's really, you know, it's been the most intensive, intensive as it relates to humans, you know, and our impact on salmon. So specifically studying sockeye salmon, we have the most information on them. They've been the most commercially important species. They were the first real flesh to be marketed internationally. We could put into cans. People recognize the red flesh of sockeye salmon. So we have the most information on this species. Again, trying to understand, how these sockeye salmon populations, in particular in the Skeena watershed, have changed over the last century.
One of the things you originally did was take a look at these century-old samples, these samples that were collected just after the turn of the century, kind of the mid-century and up to the 40s, scales from a lot of these fish that were collected at the mouth of the river during harvest time. They were also collected at Port Essington. So what did you kind of discover taking a look at those samples and, you know, fast forwarding to now? How does your work now kind of complement looking and analyzing those 100-year-old scales?
Yeah, so we knew, like others long before me had reconstructed the abundances of sockeye salmon, but really all species, coming back to the Skeena and across BC's coast. Sandy Argue was one of those authors who worked for DFO at the time, looked at catch records, cannery data, trying to reconstruct the numbers of salmon coming back to watersheds like the Skeena, back to the start of the commercial fishing, 1877, here on the Skeena. And I knew that, and I was in a Skeena Fisheries Committee technical meeting, not to get into that, but one of the DFO biologists there had mentioned, wow, someone has found this collection of scales that date back to, you know, 1912 that had been missing for 50 years. They didn't even know if it still existed. We knew some of the we knew the collection had taken place because the information was reported on every year in old fisheries reports beginning in 1913. Okay. You'd see some of the data on basic life history. How old are these sockeye that are coming back? How many years did they spend in freshwater? How large were they? You know, what was the proportion of females versus males, etc.? So those sort of basic life history data were provided. But knowing that this collection was there and knowing sort of where we were at in terms of our molecular genetic tools, mm-hmm. I thought, well, we not only could know the total number of sockeye salmon that used to come back to the Skeena, you know, we know that it's been largely diminished, but how have individual populations changed over time? If we could access this collection of scales, determine each of these fish that the scales belong to the population, we could then get a sense of, well, has every sockeye salmon population diminished over the last century? If there are differences in how they diminished, could we hypothesize why they may have diminished? What may be the main drivers? Similarly, you know, has diversity changed? Here I was thinking genetic diversity, but in the end we looked at life history diversity and population diversity, just other indices to assess change over time. Another thing with scales, which can bring us to, you know, this latest paper, is the amount that they grew in their different environments. Sockeye salmon are unique in that they rear for 1 to 3 years in nursery lakes, so freshwater lakes, before going to sea. We could look at how much they grew in their freshwater environment and the ocean, and how that has changed over time. So, yeah, my PhD was largely focused on looking back 100 years, seeing how, you know, how much the populations have changed in these various indices over time, whether that's abundance or diversity or growth. And then I'm sure we'll spend a bit of time on this, but the last chapter really not only looked back in time, but it enabled us to better understand how these populations may respond to future changes. So that's where we're at today.
You know, you've talked about this importance of diversity, not only in the DNA with salmon, but also in the habitat. And you've kind of, you know, you've used this idea of like a well-rounded financial portfolio. You know, you want to be diverse so that if one kind of pillar goes down, the whole structure doesn't come down. And so making sure that we're improving or sustaining, you know, this diversity of habitat is what will help, you know, the longevity of salmon production. Tell me a little bit more about that. Why is that so important? Why did you have to key in on that particular issue?
Well, I think because it's sort of at the root of the ability of salmon to persist and thrive. They need diversity. I mean, we need diversity even as humans. All life needs diversity. In this case, it's about the ability to adapt to future changes, right? We all know that the climate is changing. We all know temperatures are changing. They're forecast to rise. Really, life will just become a lot more variable. Yes, warmer, but more variable. One aspect or one important pillar of adaptation is having... we'll have to scratch that. What was I trying to say? Can I just cut back in or?
Yeah.
Okay, you erased that part. It's like within a given population, you have to think of all the individuals within a population, they can fit under like a bell curve, they call it, normal curve. And you'll have a variety in any one population. So individuals that can withstand slightly warmer temperatures, or they like warmer temperatures, think of that as to the right of the spectrum. And to the left of the spectrum, you have those fish that actually like things a little cooler. And you have everything in between, but you have that variety. You need that variety within a population, and you need that variety in the habitats that these fish live in, because they provide the opportunities in which to adapt to changes in the future. We don't know exactly how things are going to change. We can never truly forecast it. We might be able to forecast global average temperatures, but we'll never be able to pinpoint exactly what the exact temperature is going to be in any given one place, or what the conditions are going to be exactly in a certain type of habitat. But you need to have a diversity of those options so that at least some of those fish will be able to withstand the changes that are coming. So we can't rely on any one habitat. We need a variety. Salmon need a variety of habitats in order to be able to adapt to future changes and thrive. And I guess what I think of, and I guess reflected on with this last chapter, is that the Skeena really is endowed with a diversity. Salmon, well, the watershed is endowed with a variety of habitats, a diversity of habitats. Yeah. These lake habitats, some are very small and shallow. Historically, they've been very productive. Our data suggests that these habitats may not do so well in the future. But on the other end of the spectrum, there are these other types of habitats that are large and deep and cold that are starting to increase in their productivity, their food production, the growth of juveniles. And it's likely that these habitats, salmon in these habitats, will thrive in the future. But collectively, we need a diversity of habitats because we don't know exactly which ones will sort of win in the end. My hope is for abundant and diverse salmon populations in the Skeena, for sure. For there to continue to be inspiring natural places for my son and his future kids to be inspired by. I do have hope generally for salmon, and particularly salmon in the Skeena. They have adapted to become the diverse group of animals that they are today, whether, populations or species, by adapting to changing climatic conditions over tens of thousands of years. So they have the ability, salmon have the ability to adapt and thrive if we give them a chance. So that's one of the biggest things. And I think there's a lot of people in this world, and particularly in this region, that would like to see salmon flourish. I mean, that kind of inspires me on a day-to-day basis. It keeps me going, realizing that I'm not the only one that wishes for this and has hope for this. But I think they will. I think they'll adapt and thrive. They likely will not be in the same position they are today, nor in the same position they were 100 years ago. They will look somewhat differently. Some species will likely do better than others. And I won't make predictions there, but if there's one species that I, want to make a, put some money down on, I think coho are one of those. Because they have a quick turnover, they grow really quickly, typically spend only a single year in freshwater, go to the ocean, 2 years in the ocean, they're back. They're showing a lot of resilience. During the 1990s, there was, I'm not sure how many people would remember, but a major decline in coho across the coast. And it was identified, overfishing was identified as one of the major threats to them. Well, harvest or exploitation of coho has declined largely. It's still high in several areas, and it's having an impact on that species. But just by curtailing exploitation, coho populations have responded positively in many areas. The thing about coho is they like to spread out. So they need whole healthy watersheds, I think, to really persist in the future. You don't see them so much like sockeye salmon, where a given population, say the babeen, can host a million individual salmon. Coho tend not to be that way. They'll spread themselves out and go to the furthest reaches of a watershed. So I think they will probably do the best of all species beyond pink salmon. I mean, pinks are also champions of doing well, I think, in the future. But again, it will come down to the decisions that we make and whether we wish for them to thrive in the future. And in some ways, it's kind of odd, but in some ways that gives me hope, knowing that we have we have a role to play, or we have some control even on this, right? It's in our everyday decisions. Every day, municipalities make decisions, or provinces make decisions, or the federal government makes decisions. If they're all made in the best interest of salmon, we'll see more fish returning than we do today.
All right, Mike, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.